Okay, for the record, this is Dave Wagner, Planning Director, Josephine County, and I'm calling to order a subcommittee meeting for the Home Occupation Text Amendment of Article 92. And I guess we'll do a brief round of introductions so everybody knows who everyone is.
Valerie Montague, Planner 1, Josephine County Planning Office.
Ward Ackerman, the Rural Planning Commission.
Peter Talley, RCC, Small Business Development Center.
Nancy Hubbard, Nancy's Bookkeeping and Tax Service.
Nanette Chase, Ordinance Administrator for Josephine County.
Don Moore, Chair of the Rural Planning Commission.
And Dave Wagner, Planning Director. As I said, we'll have a brief explanation of the Oregon Public Meetings Law. David, I've got another edition for your notebook. And then for yours. One for Vivian's. One of our members, Vivian, Patrick Kilger from the Rural Planning Commission, was not here at this time. Briefly, the Oregon Public Meeting Law, as I stated before the meeting started, because we have two sitting members of the Planning Commission on this subcommittee, we're subject to Oregon Public Meetings Law. The handout goes through the history behind that. It was enacted in 1973 to make sure that all meetings of governing bodies covered by law are open to the public. Subcommittee meetings are typically not attended by members of the public, but once we do publish evidence of these meetings and the recordings on the website. So as people start to become more aware, they might hear it referenced in a public hearing before the commissioners or a planning commission elsewhere, they may show up. And the basic gist of that, the subcommittee can have as much interaction as you want with the public, but you're not required to. It's not a public hearing. You're not required to take their testimony. But typically people will sit on the side, watch the action, and at the end, typically, and that'll be up to the chair of your subcommittee. They'll maybe ask for comments from the public. Mm-hmm. But you can have as much or as little interaction with them as you like. There's some description in there on who is covered, again, because two members of the public body or a governing body are present that were subject to the law. There's some description of what a public meeting is, and it's all real exciting stuff. So you can read that at your leisure, but if you have any questions about it, you can call me and ask me. With that,
the minutes portion that we are recording will, in fact, be transcribed and put in writing.
No, it won't be. Just the recording document goes onto the website, so if people want to download and listen to the recording, they can.
Okay, all right, because that's what I'm reading, a written sound or video recording. Okay. So that's where it will be done in this
case. Yep. The staff time it takes to write up minutes is pretty onerous. Third item of business on the agenda we have tonight, and I put this agenda together with Valerie, by the way, for the first meeting, is election of committee chair. And typically, Planning Commission subcommittee meetings are chaired by a member of the Planning Commission, though that's not necessarily required. Does anyone want to volunteer? Someone who likes to run meetings?
I'll volunteer.
For the record, this is Don Moore. I'm here as an observer only and not taking part in the discussions here, just an observer.
Okay. So from our committee members present, Nancy Hubbard, Nanette Chase, Ward Ackerman, and David Talley, any discussion on the volunteer?
No.
How about a vote?
All those in favor?
Aye.
None opposed. Ward's the committee chair.
Now we know who can run back up.
And typically, if Ward's unavailable, I'll step in and conduct meetings. Next on the agenda, legislative permit authority for home occupations. So I'll give you some discussion of that. If you flip past the agenda, there's a August 29th document titled Memo regarding home occupations. This is a memorandum that went out to the Planning Commission. And we had some discussion. This is after the board had a brief discussion about home occupations in a legal meeting earlier in August. We went to the Planning Commission, discussed this item, and then we got a rash of comp plan and zone change applications before us, and we got awfully busy. Mm-hmm. And the board still hadn't given the direction whenever we're going to expend public money and have staff something that's essentially an unfunded exercise. We wait for the board's direction before we do that. And the board finally, I don't remember the exact date, but they directed us to go ahead and take this through the Planning Commission and use those public dollars for staff time and other resources to make this happen. Anyway, the 29th memo kind of lays out some of the issues, some of the reasons behind home occupations, and just behind that is ORS 215-448, should be the next page. Note that there are some specific regulations regarding exclusive farm zones, forest zones, or mixed farm and forest zones. And for reference, during our meetings, we'll usually have a zoning map here. You have some idea where in the county in general you're going to see home occupations versus farm and forest zones. But there are some specific things in the state statute, and part of the ordinance that we craft is going to have to include that language. And it's easiest just to copy it and plunk it in the ordinance. On the next page over is Article 92, and that is the existing county code on home occupations. And I would just direct you at this time to, or ask that you read the purpose statement there. I'll read it out loud for the record, but the purpose of the article is to ensure that home occupations conducted on residentially developed property are compatible with the neighborhood in which it is located and maintain the character and appearance of both the use and the neighborhood. Home occupation shall not run with the land and may not be assumed by a new owner. So that's the existing language. And I guess it's an appropriate time to say that when a subcommittee is looking at an ordinance, the purpose statement is very important, and it's also fair game. So if we want to change that, we want to add an emphasis one way or the other, or we want to maybe clarify the purpose of what we're doing in the ordinance changes, that's on the table as well. Okay. Currently, the ordinance has special standards for operation, and you can read those. Nancy's familiar with those because you have a modification, I believe.
Yes, we do.
Certain special standards for operation. And that's where you get into employees on the property. And the standards are higher because the potential degree of impact is higher. One of the folks that was invited to be on the committee, Catherine Frickman, is... she runs a kennel, and she has 7 minutes. And she is not able to attend the meetings because she's awfully busy right now. But Catherine and I discussed briefly. She might want to sort of be a participant and would like to receive some of the materials once in a while. And she said she'd love to review things and maybe make comments in writing and give us her perspective as a kennel owner. Part of what we were trying to do is get somebody who's pretty low-key home occupation like Nancy. Bookkeepers aren't a real wild group. And
well, she might take a question to that.
You ever heard about cooking the books?
And then dog kennels. We also called the gentleman that runs an excavation business. He was not available. He's pretty busy right now, I guess, which is a good thing. And anyway, we want to think about those different levels of home occupation and potential impact to the neighborhood. But that's why the current code has a general standard, has a little higher standard for people with employees and a greater potential of impact. And then there are special standards on the next page for the operation of bed and breakfast inns. We don't have a representative of bed and breakfast inns with us. One of the ideas that I'd like to forward to the committee for your consideration is to invite a B&B owner in for at least one meeting to talk about bed and breakfast. So we'll schedule that in a future meeting. And finally, for this section, they included a home occupation application. So that's the current application that we're requiring people to fill out. And just some basic information on there for property information. We've got the applicant's statement of understanding that they're filing an application and they have the burden of proof to prove that they're meeting the code. Some information about what an occupation is. We have a questionnaire, which is a format that's used in a lot of jurisdictions to help guide people into answering the questions that we need to evaluate for approving permits. Some information in there on deliveries and potential impacts. Then a page on map requirements. If you like to see a site plan map, a lot of people aren't used to drawing those, so as you can imagine, we get a wide variety of expertise on that. And then there's also a section under conditional use review standards and criteria. With that those uses that are that higher level of impact, that's what you go through as a conditional use. And then finally, there's a statement of intended water use at the end. And that always kind of throws people. I don't know why, but I guess they figure, well, I'm not using any water in my business, but
you get a few employees in there, and you have more than just the residential use on your septic.
Right. So anyway, that's what we're using right now. And part of the reason that Section 45, there on page 8 of the application, conditional use review standards and criteria, part of the reason that that comes into play is that when we get to that next level right now, the way our code is set up is that we have two different kinds of review. We have a review that's called ministerial review, and then we have what's known as quasi. Oops. I don't know how to spell this. Quasi judicial. And put together a quick thing that I was actually going to introduce later, but let me talk about the difference between ministerial and quasi-judicial first, and then I'll hand this out. A ministerial review means that there are standards, and those standards are objective. You either meet it or you don't. Example would be a property line setback. Setback's 20 feet. We look at your plot plan. If you meet 20 feet, you get your permit. If you're at 16 feet and say, well, I got to get closer than 20, you don't get your permit. And then we start talking about a variance or something like that. The standards are objective. So one of the things that, one of the natural divisions that we have in our code is between whether it's a standards only and objective kind of review, or whether it's quasi-judicial, which involves criteria. And that, of course, is subjective. So those criteria are subjective. The applicant shall demonstrate that he has mitigated all potential impacts to noise, glare, and odors from the property. That's a criteria that you have to prove as the applicant. What are you doing? If you were painting cars, do you have a scrubber? Do you have a really big distance to other property lines? Do you have something that captures that? Do you have a special attachment on the vents coming out of your building with some filters on it? How are you doing it? Let's see something. And so these get a little more complicated. Usually with a quasi-judicial review, we also have the neighbors. Up here, we're not asking the neighbors. We're applying standards and objectives that went through the code. It's assumed that those standards and those objective standards are adequate to mitigate impacts for that kind of use. And so we're not asking the neighbors at that point. Some jurisdictions will use a ministerial review, and there is an appeal process if you're a noticed neighbor. Sometimes there's a noticing threshold. 250 feet from the property line is pretty typical. Neighbor gets a notice. Then he gets a notice that the permit's been approved if they've met those objective standards. And if he still complains and says, you know, wait a minute, their building's only 10 feet away from the property line, not 30 feet. And they have an opportunity to appeal. By now, we're not there in our code. Some codes are written where, in a ministerial review, only the applicant can appeal.
So in the case of somebody having a common driveway, a road going down, there's several houses off of that driveway, which one would that fall under? Somebody said, well, I'm going to open a business. Would it be a ministerial review because it meets certain standards, or it's going to be quasi because the neighbors say, this is a shared driveway or shared road.
Well, that's a value that you'll have to determine in writing the code. I mean, currently, if you've got a shared driveway access, good question.
I've had that issue in a home occupation before. And actually, it was an easement. And part of what we looked at was the type of easement. Easements have very particular language. And so if it's not prohibitive, if it's a open-ended type of easement where there's no prohibitive language, then we see that as being allowed. So, but there are, I've seen easements written where it says no commercial traffic.
Right.
So that's one of the things that we would look at on a shared driveway.
I'm just bringing that up because it could fall in either category.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it may not be, if it's in the criteria or if it's in a standard, either way. I mean, our standard may be that an objective standard, an example of that would be, because you could write it either way, all home occupations must have 25 feet of minimum frontage on a public roadway. That's as objective as you get. Either got it or you don't. But if we say all home occupations shall demonstrate that they have adequate access with traffic generated from the site, then that's a quasi-judicial and subjective criteria. Ford and wireless. We talked about same thing, ministerial. In the wireless ordinance we're considering right now, co-location and putting antenna on an existing tower, we're going to do ministerial. But if you put up a new tower, we want to hear from the neighbors. It's going to be subjective, and you're going to have to show us that you've screened it, kept it away from people, it's not going to fall on anyone, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's the basic difference. And, you know, this will be a lot of discussion on that topic. Do we want to make it sort of a check-the-box kind of an approval, or do we want to make something more subjective? And one of the ideas that Valerie and I have investigated is, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but most jurisdictions will do a type 1, 2, and 3. Some even go 4, some only have 2 levels. Different kinds of home occupation, and oftentimes they're tied into something like that.
where you've got type 1 is just to check the box. Mm-hmm. Type 1 might even be home occupations we want to call exempt. You don't need a permit as long as you meet the code. It could be a registration. It could be a number of things.
Can I have a clarification since I'm really new at this? Home occupation is required in the county. Are city people, can city people also fall into that home occupation?
They have.
Grants Pass has their own rules on home occupation. Almost every city and county does, that I can think of. But they don't need a Josephine County permit. They need a Grants Pass permit.
Yeah, that's what I was
The jurisdiction we're talking about is everything outside of Cave Junction and Grants Pass.
And the county currently doesn't have that? The county doesn't have
they have
a
one
code?
Now. Yes.
Yeah.
Article
92. Oh, that's not okay. That's one wrenching. I was thinking, well, they have one.
Yeah, the city has business licenses they issue. Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's another.
And we have the home occupation.
Oh.
What else? We also have the home occupation.
Yes.
They do?
Yeah.
Well,
so you get any business has a business license, or it's business. Mm-hmm. You're in the city of Grants Pass or in the county?
In the city and in the county both.
Okay. So you got a business license in the city. You don't have a business license in the county because we typically don't have them.
Right.
The only thing we have is either a site plan approval for a commercial or industrial business cited in those zones, or we have a home occupation permit.
So what the fine print is on the city license of Grants Pass and all the cities, if you solicit work or any kind of orders or deliveries within the city limits, even though your business is located in the county, you are required to have a city license also. And that's another area people kind of like try to skirt around. Well, I'm located in the county, I don't need a license. But the minute they start soliciting and setting foot in the city, or even advertising via the courier, the minute they start soliciting business, they have to have a city license. I have one from Medford because I was in the yellow pages in the Medford phone book and it belongs to the Medford Chamber, and I have customers over there. So guess what? I get a little note in the mail that says you owe us $100, Mr. Kelly, because you come wandering over here once in a while.
Revenue.
Exactly. So, yeah, there's a crossover here, the difference between city and county, you know, what really is required for you to be in.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. There's something just so wrong with that.
Well, the other thing, too, is, and I know we're probably jumping around here a lot, but one of the things that scares a lot of the people who come through our office looking at licenses is this home occupation thing right after that, pre-application, $375. And they say, well, geez, I can go over to the county, to the city, and I can get a license for $50. Why is yours so much more? And then you try to explain to them exactly what we're going through and all this. When the city says, if you're upright, breathing, have a state license and a federal ID number, you're in business. So, I mean, there's a lot of things we do have to address here because a lot of people, and in your note, we talked in the BR meeting, is we have a lot of people that are skirting under the radar because of the comments that are on the current program right now.
Yeah. And one of the issues that actually Ward brought up at a planning commission meeting was that in the new economy, you've got businesses that are either started at home as a supplemental income that are trying to operate under the radar, but they're just trying to make ends meet. We have other people that are maybe formerly in the commercial industrial zones that can't pay the lease rent anymore, and now they're moving the business home. We got people in transition, and I like to characterize home occupations. There are a few folks that do it, and they never get any bigger, and they just kind of stay within that box. I knew a guy in Aloha, Oregon, who fixed cameras out of his garage, which he fixed turned into a camera repair shop. And he was there for 45 years.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Working out of his garage.
Yeah.
Put on his slippers in the morning, and padded into the next mm-hmm. room, and opened the door, and he went to work. Pretty short commute.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are usually on the way up or on the way down in size, impact, and maybe business volume. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, things to think about there. And that kind of leads right into 4E on the agenda here, the objectives of the subcommittee.
Yeah, what copy of the agenda and bring mine? I was bringing this to you this afternoon. Thank you. Where are we at on the agenda?
4E.
Okay. Who's the chair?
4. The objectives of the subcommittee, your objective is to write a new ordinance. So you're legislators. You're crafting language that will go into the county code. Having said that, let me pull you back for a moment. The easiest way to do this, rather than having 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people try to write a document together, is we'll talk about policy, we'll talk about priorities, we'll talk about process, fees, all the things that go into starting businesses, having a business in your neighborhood, the pros and cons, and one of the things I think that certainly that the board would like to see is how do we encourage businesses to locate in areas without disturbing their neighbors, so thinking about those mitigation and impact thresholds. But at the end of the day, let me do the wordsmithing. Mm-hmm. That's what I do for a living.
Yes, please God.
And Vivian is right now on the wireless committee, and unfortunately that committee started writing code. Five people all at the same time bringing in their notes, and just on a paragraph, I'll actually have three or four pages of stuff to try to go through and distill that down to some wordsmithing. So it's, you will get a crack at the final language of the ordinance. You'll get to read that, and at that point, yes, I do want to have people's comments, but to get through this process efficiently, it's best to use me as the scribe. Valerie and I will be the scribes. And you folks just sit back and read it and tell me what you think.
Good.
Okay? And that's an efficient way to do it.
Let me jump in here for a second. I was late because my dad has some cancer treatments, and he was running behind, and so I'm sorry. I apologize for being late. I know Don. I know Ward. I know you, Valerie. You're the code person, or
I work with code. I'm a planner.
Planner. Okay. And I don't know everyone else.
Nancy Hubbard. Nancy's bookkeeping and tax service.
Nancy's bookkeeping and tax service.
And I'm Annette Chase, ordinance administrator.
Annette. Charlotte Lynn.
Nanette.
It's Nanette?
Yeah,
Nanette. Oh, the third time's a charm.
I'm
right, yeah. Okay.
And I'm David Talley with RCC and the Small Business Development Center.
David
Talley.
You mentioned about the commissioners being
the Oregon meeting officer. Right. Vivian, real quick recap, and I know you've seen this document before. Because we have two sitting planning commissioners as a member of this subcommittee, we
are
three? No, no.
I'm
here as an observer.
Oh, okay.
You too. We're subject to Oregon meetings law, and did you get that already? Okay.
Thank you.
You've already seen that document, I think, as part of your planning commission member packet. But
mm-hmm. And there
you go. And I want to mention the tape recorder in front of you there is on, and we'll be tape recording the meetings, and then they get posted on the website. Okay. So rather than having Ann writing up minutes like she does for the planning commission meeting, we're just going to use the recorded minutes. Our
okay.
Recordation of our activities.
Well, I'm sure Ward and I are on the up and up here, so.
Okay. Next item on the agenda, introduction of issues. And they put something together to kind of do nothing more than frame the discussion. Pass those around, Don. I think there's probably more copies for you people working as well. Sort of discussed pros and cons of objective standards and pros and cons of subjective criteria. Obviously, the The pros of objective is it's clear for the neighbors and the permitted business what's allowed. Objective standards are essential to issue ministerial permits. There's no hearing. There's a faster time frame. It's the least cost to the jurisdiction and to the permit holder. The cons are that it's easier to write standards, but they're prescriptive. They're a black and white dilemma for the business owner and the county. What if you feel only got a part-time employee and our rule says no employees under this one threshold? What happens to businesses that don't fit the mold? Objective code results in less flexibility or room for interpretation, which is something that comes in real handy when we've got businesses that we haven't dealt with much before. The pros and cons of subjective criteria are you can negotiate with the neighbors and permitted businesses. Subjective criteria address the broader range of the business. There's more flexibility and room for interpretation. If I'm the neighbor, maybe I don't like that business, but, you know, if you put up a solid 6-foot screen there with some trees behind it, I can live with it. That kind of thing. And with subjective criteria, you've got the opportunity to do that. The cons are that criteria can be worded too broadly so that impacts to the neighbors are not adequately addressed. And businesses that change over time. Now that's actually a con of both objective and subjective criteria. But if you demonstrated that you didn't have any noise when you first started, now you've got more employees and you've got more business and you're putting on a second shift, and now you're working until 10 o'clock at night, business changed, you no longer satisfied that criteria you originally did, and now the neighbors are mad. We can't apply the criteria to ministerial permits, so the process may take longer, and typically there's more cost for the jurisdiction and the applicant. Again, if we're thinking about these things in terms of levels, and at the next meeting we're going to show you a draft ordinance that I've written for another jurisdiction. And I put that out to the Board of Commissioners when they first asked us this issue, what's that going to look like? How can we, right now we're a one-size-fits-all ordinance, essentially. Actually, have two sizes, but it's pretty much the same permit. The fee's the same. And the board wanted to see something that other jurisdictions did. So I just pulled this ordinance from one I'd written for Sherwood, Oregon, and gave it to them. And it showed level one, ministerial, level two, quasi-judicial, and the level three where you've got a business that would typically, you would see it in a commercial industrial zone, like a heavy equipment operator or something like that. You know, this might be a dog kennel with five units. This might be a dog kennel with over five or 10 or 8 or whatever the number is, something like that. Anyway, some of the, I think, factors to consider. I just listed a bunch there. Size of the parcel, number of trips, deliveries, employees. That's a pretty common standard. Differences between the residential, commercial, industrial zones and resource zones where state law is applicable. So we're going to have to accommodate those. The focus for most home occupations is in the rural residential zone, which is 5 acres in the county, though we do have parcels that are 1 acre and 2 acres. And then we have historic parcels that, even though they're in the 5-acre zone, they might be a lot smaller. In fact, we have some, what zone are we in today, looking at that plat, Woodlot Resource Zone, mm-hmm. which is typically an 80-acre parcel. And we had
less than 2.5 acre lots.
2.5 acre lots.
Mm-hmm.
There were historic parcels, and there's a law that allows them to divide those parcels. So pretty small lots, but in a neighborhood where everything's bigger. And obviously the degree of impacts in the 40-acre zone or the 80-acre zone is going to be probably different than in the 2.5 and 5-acre zone. Think about exemptions, prohibitions, if any. What kind of business do you not want to see in a home occupation? What do you want to exempt from the ordinance entirely? If you're a planning consultant and you work in the bedroom of your house and you don't have anybody come to your property and you
Do we need a permit from you? Do we even need to know about you? Maybe there's just a checklist you go through and you file that and say, okay, I've got a business, I'm on the property, but I'm exempt from the ordinance. Inside versus outside activity, or threshold between commercial industrial zones and home occupations. And this was a topic that Ward had brought up at a planning commission meeting, and I think that's an important distinction we have to make. At what point do you need to move out of the residential zone and into a commercial industrial zone on a commercial industrial parcel? And that's an important distinction. I think the exemption, when does it not apply to you, and then when have you gone too far, those are the two end zones that we're dealing with. With the rest of it between those, but we need to establish where those end zone lines are. Inside versus outside activities, distance to property lines for outside storage, screening, noise, light and glare, odors, typical stuff. What about periodic review of permits? Right now we have an annual fee that you pay. You fill out the questionnaire. When people have obviously changed their business, that's when we have a discussion. This county typically rubber stamped home occupations. They filled out the thing, brought it in. We never talked to them. We never said, hey, wait a minute. You know, your permit said you weren't going to have any employees, and now you've got 10 employees. What's going on? We never did that before. Well, we recently did an audit of all our home occupation permits, and we're going through them one by one, trying to work with people, trying to exercise a little flexibility, and try to get them to a place where we can, you know, work within the bounds of the home occupation permit while recognizing that they've gone beyond it.
How many?
Prime example: the out and about tree houses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
They are permitted for 4 treehouse units, and they have
more.
4 times that.
Yeah.
Where's that?
Gilmer. Ward?
How many permit holders do we have home?
It's about 78, according to this one notification in August.
Yeah. I think we still have 78. We may have just approved one the other day.
Currently open 78.
Okay, right.
That's for the whole county. Mm-hmm. You know, when I saw that, I just was shaking my head. It's so unreal.
It is unreal.
What do you think? That's 10%?
My own neighborhood, I would say, yeah. So periodic review of permits, we can take a look at that if we think we need it. If we think we don't, it's an issue that usually comes up. Most jurisdictions have a some sort of periodic review, an annual fee. What do we want to see? Do we want to make it biannual? You know, what? How do we want to deal with that? Temporary business locations. If somebody wants to bridge the gap between, we had one recently where Mountain Alloys here in town burned down.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And one of, is it Ron?
Mm-hmm.
One of Ron's options was to move the business home, but he didn't want to do it permanently. He just wanted to do it for part-time. And I said, it's either the whole enchilada or it's not, Ron. That's the way our code's written. So we either $2,000 fee and we do a site plan and all that kind of stuff, or maybe the commissioners waive your fee or reduce part of it or something, but we give the planning director the ability to just start waiving the fee here and reducing the fee there and charging double over here for Ward. So temporary businesses, I hadn't really thought about it much until that case came up, and I think we probably ought to think about that.
Absolutely.
And especially since home occupations are kind of that transitional thing. Residences established on commercial industrial parcels. That's an issue that came up. A gentleman in Kirby had someone living in the back of his commercial space that he was leasing. And they didn't have proper building permits, but that issue, laying that issue aside for a moment, the issue comes up in the rural areas. You've got people that are further out.
You've got not as much attention. There's not drive-by traffic. They don't have the frequency of Grants Pass city police patrols. And if we don't pass the budget, we aren't going to have much of any patrols. Do we want, right now, you can be a night watchman. In the industrial zone.
Caretaker quarters.
You can have caretaker quarters only in a manufactured home.
Is that right?
Manufactured home.
On commercial, it's manufactured home, correct? At industrial, you can have quarters in the building?
Yes.
Right.
For a night watch.
Okay. So if you think about it, with, you know, Main Street America, what does it look like? Got a big business down here. And up here, you've got residences. It's a very traditional American urban form. And we also see it in the rural areas and in rural communities that aren't incorporated, such as Kirbyville. A couple of buildings that look just like that in Kirbyville.
Well, in Kirbyville, there's the market that grandfathered in with a residence in back of it, and right next to it is the building we're talking about, because it was built after code. He can't have it, but he thought he could because
So one of the issues that came up is or some of the issues that came up were security. One less person on the roads. Don't have to drive to work. You can open your business. It's right there. If it's a snowy, crummy day and you don't want to have to be out there putting on the chains and whatever, it doesn't matter. You live on your property. Security, I think, was the biggest concern. And we've had others that they're in a commercial zone. We don't call it a home occupation because the assumption built into the code is that you're going to follow the commercial code and get a site plan review and that sort of thing. But that's one of the issues that the board would like us to also consider. So it's not home occupations per se. That's actually a separate portion of the code.
Okay.
But we'll, I think it's appropriate to bring that in into the discussion.
It's called mixed use.
Yeah, traditionally it's called a mixed use.
And just given the economy, you know, people paying a mortgage on their business and home when they can just be paying it on one structure.
Absolutely.
Or on one property.
Well, if you look at, you know, larger cities and whether we're going to ever get that way, but you take a look at the Portlands and the Seattles and San Francisco's and even in Eugene, where you're getting retail and small commercial ground level and apartments and condos above, and lots of times those are attached to the person. Part of the deal is you put a store in, you can live here. So whether we are going to, you know, cross that bridge in this county or not, I don't know. But that is the trend. When you start losing lack of space for growth, you have to go vertical. So that may be something as we look forward to, if that ever should be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the vertical permits of both residential and commercial or retail together.
Right. And we can think about the form that we want that to take. I mean, we may assume that it's going to look like this. And it might look like this. There's the business, here's the house. Maybe there's another house back here somewhere else on the property. That kind of form. I think what we're trying, I have to assume because I wasn't around when that portion of the code was written, but typically you don't go mixed use because you don't have the density. It's an urban form, more likely. But in small rural centers, that previous drawing with the residents in the bottom, that's where you see them. Buildings were just built that way. But what we're trying to get away from is probably business masquerading as trailer park. Or trailer park masquerading as business, I should say. Oh, really? No, those are all caretakers. They're just taking care of the business.
Right.
Not really.
Each one has a four-hour shift.
Yeah. And then what does that do? Of course, that takes away a commercial parcel from elsewhere, puts more starts moving those areas out.
How much of a crossover do we have, or what the jurisdiction with the city and the county, if we're talking about, you know, occupational permits within the city limits,
how much code difference are we going to run into with what the city says? I mean, not to say we're going to have two different writings of the rules, but, you know, with the city growing and annexing and taking more of county...
Yeah, and especially with UGB expansion, right.
Yeah. Where does that put us? I mean, should we be looking at what the city's coding is, too, right now, so we're not getting this two different worlds?
Right.
Well, if the city said I could do it, now you guys tell me I can't.
Right.
I used to be in the county, now I'm in the city. Now, we've already heard this, but the areas have been annexed
right
into the city.
Wouldn't they be grandfathered in, though?
Some of them are, some of them aren't. It's the way it was.
Well, it depends upon the new jurisdiction and how they want to look at that. If they're not willing to go there, then maybe they don't.
Typically, they would. Structures are usually grandfathered. Uses are a little sketchier. And there's also the, I assume most of you are familiar with the it's called grandfathering, planners call it a non-conforming use. If you establish a use and your zone changes or you get annexed into a new jurisdiction that doesn't allow that use, you get to continue it as long as you maintain it. If you abandon it, and it depends on how long you abandon it, the use is essentially goes away, and then you're subject to the new code.
I can look into that, too. I can confirm with the city what their process or what their standard is for.
Right. Well, we're part of this exercise is that, and Valerie and I were kind of thinking ahead as to how many meetings we should have, and we could discuss that later tonight, and what to accomplish at those meetings. But one of the meetings prior to it, we're going to send you a few codes of other jurisdictions and examples. We'll try to highlight the things that maybe fit into the structure of issues that we're looking at. But and especially, you know, Grants Pass will be one of those codes. So I think that we'll also want to look at what can we pull from Jackson County or Douglas or somebody else. I did pull some examples of other codes that I'm already looking at from just doing a Google search.
One of the other things that I ran into with the client was not only the city and county, but we're talking about the state and ODOT. We've got some people who were originally in the county on Rogue River Highway that's on the fringe of urban growth area of the city of Grants Pass, but there's a sign that is sitting on their property that's been there since Odd 6. And I had to go back on Odd 6, it was only 6 years, 5 years ago now. But now he doesn't comply with the setback of what ODOT says. So all of a sudden the rules changed for, you know, because he bought the existing property and building, but the sign was already there, been there for, you know, 30 years. But ODOT has said now the setback on Road by River Highway is another 5 feet more, which puts that sign, one post, 5 feet in ODOT's jurisdiction. So I guess the question being again is, you know, we're looking at, you know, these crossovers of all this stuff, if we, you know, more urban growth, you know, versus county growth, and ODOT said, well, you know, because of traffic patterns, it's probably going to be Williams Highway Road, the major thoroughfares, where they're going to come in and say, oh, by the way, we're putting in this, and now the setbacks are going to be more, which is what we're fighting with right now with the Redwood area. You know, ODOT's saying, you know, this is what the city and county is going to do, and we're saying, no, we're not. So, you know, those are issues that I think, too, are going to have a lot of people concerned about, is their business going to be still alive?
Right.
Because they're going to lose 5 feet of their frontal properties. Mm-hmm. And it has nothing to do with the county. It has something to do with the state.
Mm-hmm.
Where's that? Where do they get the authority to do that?
No. Do they get the authority to do it?
Yeah.
Because the board can tell you.
Yeah.
Eminent domain.
Huh?
Eminent domain. It's the police power.
Mm-hmm.
That's just buy your property, you pay for it, and take it.
That's just bad.
For public use.
You just take it first and then they pay for it.
That's just, I'd say another word, but the recorder's on. It's bad.
If you want public roads to drive on, that's the downside for the property. So,
what is our annual fee to review a home occupancy?
$125.
That's the annual fee. And that's just review, right?
It comes with when they're sent out, they come with a checklist that basically asks the same type of questions that are involved in the approval process.
Mm-hmm.
How many employees do you have? What are your hours of business? Have you had any changes to the main
things that have been approved in your business. And if they answer no, there have been no changes, business continues. If there's been any changes that are going to trigger further review, then that has to be dealt with.
Valerie, can we get a copy of that?
Got a question?
Yes, yeah. Okay. I'll get you one.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I think it's essentially the same as...
I believe it's the same as the initial application checklist.
The home occupation questionnaire. That's attached to
it. I'll
get
it. Yeah.
Pretty sure that it's the same as that. Mm-hmm.
Is this format up for modifications at all?
Yes.
Everything.
The only thing that we really have to keep intact is the state requirements, which apply to resource lands.
That's easy. We cut and paste. Portion of the code goes right in, pull it out of state code, no discussion needed.
Okay.
Essentially.
Yeah.
I think it's important for you to understand where those areas are, and that's why we have the zoning map, and I can show you where that's going to be applicable. But that is the state minimum. We can do more if we want, if we identify a potential impact or something that we think really needs to be looked at. Otherwise, you take the state language and you put it in your code.
Just some of the issues that are coming up with what's going on with the city and the property out on Upper River Road with state land use, what that property was originally designed for, and that's some of the issues that's coming up, it's trying to be modified, and the state's saying no.
Because it's resource land.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
It's a good prime example of, you know, what somebody said, well, you know, the land's not being currently used right now, but we want to change it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't make them very happy in my pre-application review.
That's a tough one, isn't it?
It is.
One thing that I wanted to ask people, just to, I don't know, it's kind of an icebreaker, I guess, but to get your juices flowing, is to, we're talking about objectives of the subcommittee itself, and we do have kind of an overall objective of what we're after, but I think I'd like to maybe open it up for discussion on what are your personal objectives, or what are you bringing to the table that you'd like to see, frustrations or desires, or what do you want to see out of this process? Kind of, if you're putting your own personal stamp on it, what might that be? And I just kind of throw that question out to people and let you answer however.
Well, I thought, since Nancy, you've gone through the process, right, and you... I'd like to see her opinion for sure on this, because she's been through it and she knows what it takes, and I want to see how bad it's been or good.
Scary.
You know, if you're happy with it or you're mad about the fees. I mean, what exactly?
My first reaction was panic at the fees.
Okay.
Because for the review and stuff, if it hadn't gone the way it did, we were looking at another $2,000 or more. And, you know, it's all of a sudden, can we even be in business this year?
Right.
You know, and it's very panicky. And I know fees are one of the things that we're going to be talking about. But along that same line, I threw out to my organization Saturday the fact that I was on the subcommittee. And some of the feedback and scary thoughts that I've gotten have just been off the wall.
Right.
Oh, it's okay. For instance, I'm a bookkeeper in the county. I go to the city and do some clients. I have a city license, but I work out of my home, but I don't have any clients in my home. Do I have a home occupation? Okay, Nana is saying no, and that's great.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have somebody come to my house, even if it's one,
to pick up their tax return.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you're still not.
And I hear what you're saying, but is that something that we want to put in as an exception?
That's why we're here now.
Well, I think that's his point.
Threshold.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between a type 1 and a type 2?
Because I'm sitting here looking at 78 people have home occupation permits, and I'm going, I know there's a ton more. And therefore, also from my business standpoint, we do tax returns of people that have home occupations. Amway, does that fall into the home occupation permits? They have products coming and going. They're working out of their house.
People who run businesses out of eBay.
Oh, eBay sales. I mean, that's,
yeah. There's another. Yeah, we've got some of those too. These are types of, I mean, as a professional, I can advise clients once I have a clue what to advise them at. And at this point, I wouldn't have even asked the question of the client, do you have a home occupation permit? I just would not have entered my thoughts. But going there now, it's like, holy schmoly.
It kind of goes over some of it. You know, retail sales.
Right.
You know, if they've got the items and they're going out and delivering them, then no. But if having people come to their home and buy them and pick them up, that's a retail sale.
Right.
Right.
So
we have a horribly written definition of home occupation that says a home occupation does not include operations that which meet all the following criteria. And it lists those types of thresholds, making things at the home like quilting, mail order businesses, if they have a service that is just completely held within the residence, no customers, no employees, no sign, no customers, and no large-scale deliveries, no bulk deliveries. So if you don't have any of those things, then you're not a home occupation.
And bulk
I
deliveries,
like
the way we look at that is if it comes in a box and the guy in brown delivers it to your door, that doesn't count. It comes on a pallet. Yes, it does.
Right.
And those are the, you know, Nancy, you hit the nail on the head.
Well,
I mean, it's those thresholds. It's retail.
Yeah.
It's trips.
I've seen people who work out of their house and do large semi drop-offs. Maybe it's 6 months with inventory for them, so you won't see that truck again, but that truck will be parked in front of their house for a couple hours while they're
They can't get those deliveries.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
And that's not typical for residents.
Right.
It's how I kind of look at it. Yeah. But it is typical to have UPS.
Oh, yeah. UPS, FedEx, all that, yeah.
Well, my neighbors have UPS more than I do.
So, David, what
brings
you to the group in
there? Originally, I did work out of my house before I got big enough to where I moved into town, and of course, now I'm at RCC and the Small Business Development Center, too. But my job is to make sure that people understand what they're getting themselves in to start a business and go through all the rules and regulations. Obviously, city permits, licensing, and federal ID and everything else. And one of the first questions I ask them, rather not, is where's your place of residence if you're going to be working out of your home? If they say city, I says, okay, it doesn't matter whether you're brick and mortar or you're working on your house, you've got to have a city license. If they say county, I says, well, okay, what type of business are you doing? I just had a gentleman right now, they're doing a glass company. They're working out of a rental. So the first thing out in the mouth is the landlord know you're doing this because you're renting property. And we get into all the insurance issues, but here's a situation where we're talking about. It probably won't be a UPS because we're talking about windshields and glasses. They're going to be delivered to this place that they're going to put on their truck and then take it to a house or a car because they do mobile installations. Okay, so the truck's going to be there 15, 20 minutes dropping off big pieces of glass and windshield. Is this part of this criteria? So I said, that's a question I really can't answer yet, but I said, I'll be getting those things back to you. When I send people over here, when they fall into that criteria, I would bet you that probably 1% leave my office and come here. The other people who do come here, they see this and they see the code book that you whip out that's about that thick. They probably ask the question and turn around and leave. They say, well, I'm just getting information.
They don't
follow through on it because they say, oh, crap, I'm not going to tell anybody. And this is where we talk about the people under the radar. So what I want to get out of this, and as part of the BR&E, we want to make sure that number one, the county is not losing money. I mean, I shouldn't say that, everybody in the world should have a license and the county loses money, but everybody should be equal pay, equal level, for their business. Now, whether it's a sliding scale based on their income, because I looked at a couple other cities and how counties and how they charge their planning stuff, and it's based on, number one, what your volume of sales is. when we're talking about the city, they've all, theirs is based on how many employees you have. Mm-hmm. So there's, you know, other areas that we could get into, but I want to make sure there's an equal playing field for everybody. And 78 people in the county doing business is not an equal playing field. And so, I mean, I don't want to scare my clients away and say, okay, you know, starting the business, by the way, you have to have this, and oh, by the way, this too. But that does scare the bees out of a lot of people when I go through the checklist of did you do this, did you do this, and do that, and how much have you got set aside in your startup cash to pay for these things?
Startup cash?
Well, there's a thing called startup cash, and there's another one called working capital, you know.
Wow.
So those issues come in, and I want to make sure that I'm giving my clients, which is every small startup business in this county that comes through the SBDC office, the right information, and that we're not scaring them to move out of this area. And, you know, there has been a lot of businesses that packed their bags and said, we're not going to screw around here anymore.
That's what happened in a place I used to live. They just modified their code to be so convoluted that, you know, it would take a watchmaker, a Swiss watchmaker, and, you know, a couple of lawyers just to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so people just said, went elsewhere.
Right. I mean, I've got a gentleman that's behind me when you were talking about the auto shop and everything else, and he's been in violation with you guys off and on over the years. He was doing some things this last summer that just kept me that close from turning them in until I found out that you got rid of the anonymous part. and I'm too visible in the county. I mean, all the committees and things, like when I said, now I got to keep my mouth shut. But when he's running a full-size compressor till 11 o'clock at night and you smell paint fumes because he doesn't have a scrubber, you know, that's wrong. How do you police that stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, are you asking the neighbors to, you know, turn neighbors in? And you guys can't be out patrolling. I mean, you guys are right now in a world of hurt when it comes to financials and money. But
there's only me.
And you're in a real big hurt.
I'm the only one.
Yeah. So you're asking neighbors to turn neighbors in, unless it really gets to the point where all the neighbors, just, you know, this guy's violating, you know, everything in the world. So. You know, that's the other issue, is how do we police it? I mean, you're asking me to go through what I see, and those are things that I would have to address, is, you know, how do you police that?
Especially when you're dealing with the two things that are extremely important, someone's livelihood and somebody's residence. Mm-hmm. So you're putting people at odds because it's two of the most important priorities they have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like I say, when people say, well, I'm doing working on my home, I said, okay, that's fine. Yeah, the only people who are going to complain is going to be your next-door neighbors when they see the UPS truck coming 10 times a day or they see a semi pull up in front of your house. If you're working in your house and neighbors aren't being bothered, then you don't have any problem. But if you go across that line, like you were talking about, you know, your neighbor got more UPS trucks than you do, then the neighbors may complain that there's activity going on. It's not residential. It's not home.
That's one of the main complaints I get on the unpermitted, unauthorized home occupations, businesses going on in rural residential areas is it's the noise and a lot of times the stuff that they see, but mostly the noise. I mean, people call me and say their generators or their auto car lifts are going so loud that I can't sit there and watch TV. I can't sit in my yard and enjoy my yard and,
you know. So. And to expand on that, as a code administrator for the county, what are you hoping to get out of this exercise and out of being on the subcommittee?
Well, I'm hoping that the focus is on the impact to the residents. Right. You know, that it's we consider people buying a home in a residential area and they expect to have a residential neighborhood. And then here comes a business, you know, auto repair. And it's got generators going and those riveting things and the car lifts and,
yeah,
you know, that doesn't seem right. So I really like the idea of restructuring this, mm-hmm, to different levels and really looking at maybe some that we've allowed that really should be in a commercial zone.
Mm-hmm. Other jurisdictions do put prohibitions on certain businesses. They're not considered.
auto body businesses or one that should be in commercial zones.
We usually get complaints about those.
Yeah.
Ward, what do you want to get out of this?
Well, you know, I'd like to see that, you know, this has to be a user-friendly operation and not so difficult. And I think, like David said, I think they get afraid. I mean, we want to make this so it's, they're not afraid, that we're here to help them, that we're here to show them what has to be done and you know, walk them through it. And I think the fees need to be looked at greatly. I think the fees are... And, you know, I got commercial property, and I'd love to see all my buildings rented, but I, on the other hand, I'd love to see people start their businesses and get going, and as they grow and expand, come see me, you know, and as people are downsizing, you know, things are changing. This whole economy is changing. Our world is changing. So,
I would think as a commercial and industrial property owner, I mean, if they start here and they're growing, and we're encouraging them along the way, sooner or later,
that's right,
they come see you in the commercial industrial sector.
Absolutely. So.
And they're established, and hopefully they've got a good business track record and all that.
Yeah, that's what it's all about. So.
Well, we do have a problem that people who have had commercial businesses are now moving them to their homes and starting out as a home occupation, and then they have developed them more to commercial use.
And in this climate, we've also had, I've had phone calls for the reverse. I can't afford my commercial rental property anymore. I need to move my business home. What's it going to cost me? Can you tell them? And they're not in any, you know, type of situation at that point to be able to even afford that fee. Mm-hmm.
The whole economy is changing, and it's not getting better anytime soon. So we need to accommodate these people and try to make them, you know, it's their livelihoods, it's their lives, you know, we need to accommodate that. So.
Well, as your planning director, I'll answer my own question. What do I hope to get out of this?
You
I would like
me.
Something that's, what's that?
You missed me.
No, I didn't.
Oh,
you chimed in, I thought you were done. Go ahead.
It's
not
your turn yet. We're going around.
Hold on, I
can't go
that way.
You had spoken up at one time,
there's
Megan.
There's
I thought
a
you were
message
you
was mad.
Yeah, go ahead. It's like you rule that way.
They're not trying to ignore you.
Well, I will never be ignored.
I got that feeling you're correct.
Well said. What do you want to get out of this?
What I wanted to get out of this message is what Ward said, is to make it simpler for people, maybe lower the fees so they can start up, you know, and not be afraid. But I was thinking while I was listening to Nancy that there's all these people out there that have these home businesses, and they're too terrified that you're going to come take their home business away from them or charge them these horrible fees. So maybe it would be a good idea to run a little ad in the local paper that says, have a little town hall meeting of anybody who would like to have a home business. Not say anybody who currently has one, but who would like to have one, come and give us your ideas of how you would like the code to read. And, you know, they can wear paper bags over their heads, they can come, you know, with hoods, whatever, you know, and give us their ideas of what they want to see. Don't you, I would think that that would be a good way to start getting the word out that, you know, we're here to help you, not to attack or hurt you.
Or even an educational something or another.
That would be good.
Like in the newspaper or...
One issue that Valerie had raised with me the other day, she was smirking there when brought this up, but is maybe this group produces a news release of some sort. Mm-hmm. And maybe when we get a little further down the line and we've got, while soliciting ideas is a good idea, that's part of the reason that we have a mix of folks here at the table, is to solicit those ideas. You're the representatives of the community out there.
And we have one representative here that actually does it from her home. Two?
Well, I have a brick and mortar here, but I have everything replicated at home. So when I go home at 5, I work till midnight at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I do that. I mean, it's no low impact. It's all stuff.
2 out of 78 people. No.
I've had 2 home businesses.
Yeah.
So,
as a photographer and a land use consultant.
Can't we do that up front, though, so we get ideas before we start formulating our ideas, I think, and then that would feed into it and, I think, set it up a little better, personal opinion.
Well, one of the things I can do, I mean, because I'm so involved in the chamber and the community, I mean, I can announce this and say, you know, anybody who's interested, the majority of people who are in chambers, except for the big companies, are small businesses.
I mean, they're all 10 or less employees.
But they're all licensed.
They're all legal, yes.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm looking for people who don't want to get licensed.
And I think if we go after that, we kind of have to do what we did out at the animal shelter. And the reason, I don't know if you guys know that Brad's my son, Brad Talley, out there. We did an amnesty program and say, okay, you know, we're not going to charge any late fees or all that stuff because you're licensed and everything else. But it's more informational, come on in, you know, this is what's really going to take, you know, for your business to get going. And what Warren said and I'm trying to say is we need to look at those fees and say, okay, you know, we're not going to penalize you because you've been working on your house for the last 10 years, so we're not going to go after you. But going forward, here's what we're going to do for you. We're going to make it look like we're helping them.
If I were a home business person and I read that, oh, we're going to let you know this, I wouldn't even go because I wouldn't want you to see my face. I wouldn't want you to know I was out there. I think it would be more like if you're interested in starting a home business, here is, you know, we want to hear from you. And we want your ideas because we're writing this code and we want your input before we write that code. And then they go, yeah, we want our input in that code too. You know,
if the issue is, and we hear this all the time, we hear it at SBDC too, is that even though they were, quote, not government, you know, because they're part of RCC and SDA, is that the fear of the government.
Mm-hmm.
And under the county osmosis, you know, they're going to say, oh, they're going to find out who all these people are going to come in. We would probably have a better chance as doing it as a community service, as a chamber or through SBDC, and saying, you know, we're here to help you start business. That's what SBA is all about and SBDC. We're looking at helping the county come up with a better way to help you start your business. We want your input. The county's not even labeled on it.
And maybe a questionnaire or something like that,
yeah.
So people could fill out.
Maybe you do it in one of your auditoriums at RCC, and we could all like be in the audience so we could hear it.
Yeah. I mean, we hear this all the time. I mean, the fear of, the county or the city or the state, you know, what are they going to hear from us and what are they going to do? Whereas if we're separated from that, we're acting as an intermediate, and we might have a better lot, right?
And I think the people who are writing this code need to hear from those kind of people, from the people who are afraid, you know, before we sit down and write something that's going to control their lives.
I don't know so much that they're afraid, they just don't want to be on the radar and pay any money.
They don't want to be on the radar.
And if we say we'll help you and this is our new warm and fuzzy policy, there's still a lot of them are still going to say,
no, I wouldn't go either with that. I wouldn't go, but if somebody said, we're going to write a policy and we want your input before we do it, I'd go, yeah, I'm going to go get my input.
Well, there's some whose input is my property.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do what I want to do. And if I want to run my business on my property, then I'm going
to
do that.
Or I should be able to have a big auto body or junkyard.
That's fine. And let them speak. You know,
and you might end up with a bunch of Lynette's complainants showing up, too.
But that's fine. That's what,
except for when you say, we want to hear from you, give us your ideas, and then you shut them down and say, no, we can't possibly do that. Then,
well, you don't tell them
then
that. When you go to write this, you're not writing it as some kind of onerous, you know, draconian law for them to follow. You've got their ideas, you've got the idea they don't want to be messed with, you know. Some of them will be more extreme than others.
They'll look
but
at what we have, and they'll say, I didn't put any of that in there. So there's the chance.
It may not be
that.
We might put what their ideas are in. There may be some reasonable people.
We'll hope. But I do think somewhere along the line, especially relating to the fact we only have 78, there needs to be some kind of blurb somewhere that at least gets people thinking, should I have one? Do I need one?
Do you conduct business out of your home in Josephine County? We had talked about a website about those businesses who come through and are approved and have authorization to operate, that we have a county website, have them up there and say, these are county authorized businesses.
Ooh, I would like that.
The thought.
The advantage to me as a professional is I could look at it and see if my clients are in compliance, which is an issue we try to look at on a lot of issues.
One of the things that I'm going to tie into this, what I'd like to get out of it is you're a planning director as well.
if it is done, is I would like to see a clear distinction for people. I want them to see the county as a partner in trying to get their business going. One of the things that Dave Kelly and I have discussed is when I first started my small business in Vancouver as a planning consultant working out of an extra bedroom in my house, I went to the SBA and I met with some gentlemen who were called SCORE, Service Corps of Retired Executives, an SBA program. I don't know if they're still in operation anymore.
In Arizona, they've pretty much died.
Right.
Just can't hold people to do it.
But they were retired executives that helped young bucks like me start their business. And halfway through the conversation, I asked them, well, you know, how do you advise people on their land use planning, zoning, building permits? And they said, we don't know anything about that. I said, look, you've got folks moving into the county, starting businesses. You've got folks wanting to lease property. You've got all these things happening out there. And while Washington at that time, the state of Washington, was a little less strict than Oregon, quite a bit less strict, there still was zoning in Clark County in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. And these guys didn't have a clue. And there are several cities within Clark County, Ridgefield and Camas and Washougal and Battleground, Vancouver. And they had different rules too. So I did a seminar for small business owners, and the accountants talked to them, and a lawyer came and talked to them about setting up, whether they wanted to be an S-Corp or a LLC or what kind of business model they wanted to follow, and they had somebody who was an advisor about writing their business plan, a guy that specialized in finance, and then the planner stood up, and we talked about land use, and I was scheduled for a half an hour, and they wouldn't let me leave. And that kind of energy and that kind of partnership that I felt with people. I had recently left a municipal jurisdiction to go out on my own, and I really found a need being fulfilled there. And,
well, that's one of the things that we've been doing for years, and in fact we've kind of modified it now, but we haven't got into inviting you. We have a thing that's called Smart Start, where we go through all of those issues. Now, we address that, but we don't have a planner come in and say, okay, we basically say you need to go over, you know, to the planning office and find out if you fall within that criteria. You need to go to City Hall if you fall into that criteria. So they get all that, walk out of there with all that information and says, okay, yeah, this is what we have to do. But to take something one step like you're doing, I mean, we've taken a three-hour class, and now we've downsized it to 2 hours because we found out it was information overload. You know, you were talking about right now, a lot of people don't want to be inundated. When we tell them that you got to do this, and that before you can open your doors, they go, holy crap, what else do I have to do? And a lot of some people are scared of Jesus on them. They just go,
yeah,
I don't want to start a business if this is what it takes. And then other people say, okay, fine, that's what I need. So I agree with you. I think, you know, maybe we modify our thing, maybe we do invite you. I mean, I'll talk to, you know, the powers be at our end, but it's something that's been a pet peeve for mine for a long, long time because of this. Sorry, like, going this way.
But I think my objective, though, to boil that down to what my objective is to have more people walking through that door that want to sit down at this conference table with Valerie and myself and Annette, whomever, in the planning and building department, and sit down and talk about how do we move your business, where do we start, how do we move you through this, and eventually maybe you've got a brick and mortar store or someplace in the commercial zone and that's really where you want to be. Talk about your goals and really establish a partnership with businesses. They shouldn't be afraid of the planning and building departments.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I'm going to call for.
Yes.
And, well, not everyone. We've got enough people that walk through the door. And Valerie and I were telling the rest of them about a winery consultant we had recently that came through, and yeah, she was pretty scared when she first started, and she's our biggest fan now because it came out well.
Mm-hmm.
And we really helped a lot.
And you skipped her.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. She even complained when you...
Who said I was going?
You didn't give me trouble.
Who said I was going last?
I didn't see you.
Who said I was going last, but I ain't finished. Valerie?
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that this is an opportunity to create some equity and fairness for those people who want to start a business and give them a viable opportunity, a way to do that, that doesn't create obstacles and doesn't create an inability to come up with the capital to do so. But on the other hand, they say that good fences make good neighbors, and I think a good ordinance will maintain neighborhood relations in a way that NANS calls won't increase as we approve more home occupations. I think that we really need to have a lot of respect for the reasons why people move into rural areas. We have a lot of families here. We have a lot of retirees here. And they deserve to maintain their property values, and they deserve to have the life that they envisioned without having to worry about traffic, noise, and any other type of interferences that come from the operation of businesses.
Right.
And so I think that's something we really need to consider, both sides of this ordinance, in mitigating for impacts to neighborhoods and to create a workable process that does make it easier for people to feel like it's doable for them, and that it's not something where they're just going to walk in the door, hear the fees, hear all of the requirements, turn around, walk out, and just go do whatever, or not do anything at all.
Don, any thoughts?
Okay. One of the reasons I am here tonight, I always like to meet with the subcommittee so I know exactly what, when it comes to me, then I kind of put the faces with it here and some of the ideas. When we originally, as the Planning Commission, we did sit down at a workshop, and we did go over this, and we came to the conclusion that the fees are way, way too high. They scare people off, but I think we could lower the fees here. I think if we have a structure that's more like this, it's more compatible, where people can understand it and not be afraid of it, then they're going to buy into it. But we have problem areas, and one of them is like Body Shop, for instance. It just doesn't work well out in a residential or country atmosphere. I didn't move up here to smell paint, I can tell you that. And I didn't come up here to listen to rivet guns and body tools and et cetera. You know, I like my rest out in the country, and I think those belong in commercial buildings like you have, not out in a rural residential area. We have to provide protection for the residents because, you know, we as a community here have to sell quality of life. And if we have people complaining to prospective people who want to move to Josephine County, oh, well, they just let anything go up anywhere, and they don't have control of their zoning, then we're going to have a problem of attracting the type of people that we want to come and live here. So I think getting control over this and making it user-friendly and having some sort of control, too. 78 businesses in the county. It's unbelievable, actually, when I hear that figure. We have more than that just sitting out in Cave Junction. I think it's this is long overdue. But user-friendly. In fact, as I was sitting here, there ought to be a form, and it says EZ on it. and we start going through and screening people that way first and find what category that they'll be in and try to reduce these fees for these people so they're not afraid of us. Now everybody now thinks, oh, God, I got to deal with government. I just see them cringe. You know? This poor guy over here, I don't know how he gets out of bed. You know, I'd be like this all the time, you know, because I know they were coming after me.
Yeah, for 20 years?
Yeah.
21 years.
Yeah. Everybody loves Ward. So. Anyway, keep it simple. Keep those costs in line. Let's get everybody on board and then, you know, have an annual fee. I don't know, $125, if that's reasonable or not, but if you have somebody that's on the first level one, the easy level, it doesn't take much review.
Or do you have to have annual review? Maybe it's every 5 years or every 2 years. And the slowness of this economy can be every 5 years.
Well, you don't want to let it go too long.
No, because in 5 years it may not be that.
Yeah.
Or they changed business from what they had really started.
Every 2 years, maybe.
I don't, whatever you come up with, but there needs to be a control on that of some sort, because we do have some businesses that are growing. Some are not.
What's growing? I just want to know.
I'm just curious. It's really busy.
Yeah, I would say it, but we're being recorded.
No. The green stuff.
Yeah, it's green stuff.
Yeah, we are growing now.
Yeah, literally.
It's just wow.
Okay, I got you.
The cash crops, okay.
Yeah, that's the unregulated part, though.
One of the things that I would like to see, and I've been doing a lot. In fact, I went to Douglas County. When I plugged in Douglas County, this is what I got back on how to start a business in Douglas County. It wasn't Douglas County, Oregon. Douglas County, Georgia. Really nice packet. Is the maneuverability of our website. And I say our because I'm here right now. But I tried to go on to planning and find out information and try to see what it took to get start a business. And I'll tell you what, after three or four clicks, I was like, forget it. There's too many layers. It's very cumbersome. So if somebody was thinking about coming here or looking what to do before they call war or come in here, so they're going to go, oh, this is BS.
Right.
And that's where a lot of the stop points come too.
This county does not have a how to start a business in Josephine County portion of the website.
Right.
There just isn't one. And just about every
that's
other county.
That's one of our objectives.
That's worth it.
Well, I've been working with the city on the same issue. This is county of this subcommittee that I've been working with Steve Dahl in the city over there. And we very, very quickly put together a brochure. I mean, because the people at the administrative office, when they tell the people coming in out of life, they tell them all kinds of things, but it's not the stuff that in the sequence it needs to do.
Right.
So Steve and I sat down exactly what we're doing here, and we put things in sequence of here's where you go first, here's where you go second, oh, by the way, you do this before you...
Yeah, right there.
Yeah.
This is pretty, not very slick, and it's a first crack at it.
Well, that's the same thing we did. We had to do something.
Okay.
We made a
start with something.
Three-panel brochure right off the bat because we were getting too many mixed messages from the clerks at the desk that was taking the money from people to do it. Oh, you're fine. Go ahead and do this. And that's where all these issues came in. So the joint effort of city-county to make it, you know, seamless, this piece that we got here is everything, city, county, SBA, college, everything is in here when you say this is doing business in Douglas County, Georgia. I mean, it's a pretty, this is downloaded as a PDF. It would probably be two-sided. Everything checklist. Where to go, who to call, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what my goal is to make my job and make my clients who come in who want to do business here to do this. So, I mean, we're all on the same page. I don't know how much time we got to
that's
do this.
That's excellent, because where I came from, I was on the Sanitary District Board, and there would be people who would come into town, they'd go to the city, they'd get a permit to build a building, they'd build this building, then they would come over to the Sanitary District and say, oh, when I hook up to your Sanitary District, we go... Well, the people that work there, they say, well, we can't hook you up because this pipe in the street is already at capacity. So they sat there with this building and couldn't be hooked up to the sewer. So when that first came to my attention, when I was in there, I said, excuse me, I said, doesn't anybody tell them to go first to the sanitary district and check this stuff out? So that was one of the things they started doing was, first you must go to the sanitary district and check out.
Right.
You know, and see if you can...
Well, matter of fact, it's interesting when I look at this, right after that, a big bold letters, please do not do anything without calling us first. I mean, it's a big bold type and everything else.
It's something similar in ours.
And it's good verbiage we use here, too. I mean, it talks about construction permits and all that stuff. But it was just interesting. Okay, building zoning permit information in bold letters in the first paragraph. Do not invest any money in a location until zoning has been thoroughly researched. Go to your zoning administration office and then goes current zoning classification, building setbacks, off-street parking, buffer zones, yards and screening, lot minimum areas, sign regulations. Take that letter. Don't do anything until you talk to your planning department before start a business. Same thing we went over to the city. Do not start a business until you find out the building you're moving into is zoned correctly.
That's why we call
and
it planning.
You guys know. Well, I guess you guys know the story about the barbecue place on 7th and D.
Mm-hmm.
That's zoned retail residential. It's a new barbecue place now. But the original owners that were in there had the barbecue sauce they've been doing for years at the farmer's market. They could make it there, they could sell the food there,
but they couldn't ship from that location because it was not a commercial zoning. It was retail residential.
So they went under.
Well, partly that, because they had two locations. They had to maintain everything else. Mm-hmm. So that was an issue that he did not know when he went in there, never asked a question, until the city came along and said, oh, by the way, you can't be having commercial trucks coming and going here shipping your product.
Yeah.
So then who took it over? On Redwood Highway.
Yeah, that's on Redwood Highway.
Now, do they ship anything?
Nope, they don't make sauce that they ship.
Their stuff is sure good, though. Yeah. Wow.
But that's part of the reason we came up with this outline.
That looks scary.
This is actually, it's not. What's scary is trying to get your business started without looking at this.
If you're a planner, it doesn't look scary. If you're a person who's starting to start a business, you look at me and you go,
you don't have to hit every box.
Yeah, I was showing this to Dave, and it went to the business retention and expansion.
BR&E.
And spoke to the Chamber of Commerce as a whole as well about this. This is our first crack at putting together the outlines, talking about land use permits, building, and there's a flyer here from the environmental health folks. If you're going to have a kitchen, you got to talk to the environmental health officer. Mm-hmm. And we put this together for them. Dave has seen a copy of it, and John up at the Chamber has seen it as well. And
so that's a great start.
I haven't heard back from you guys on anything you want me to change up.
The first thing is the college was closed 2 weeks, so I didn't get your envelope until Monday, the date of the 30th, and it came in the mail on Monday.
Wow. Okay. We made an effort to actually hand-deliver it to the SBDC. We missed them by half an hour.
Sorry.
Day before Christmas. Anyway, this is part of what we're getting out. Other things are the website. Getting links to SBDC, to SoReady, to the Chamber of Commerce. They don't exist on the county's website right now. They should by now. I've been after them for a couple of 3 weeks now to get those on there. But just having the link on the website, and I think that's the first baby step, and after that we've got a badge or a portion of the web page that's dedicated to these kind of issues and starting businesses.
Can we get a piece of that, or is that premature?
It's in draft form right now, but I think the Planning Commission as a whole will see it once it goes out.
And that is for commercial industrial properties, not
This is for commercial industrial, not home occupation.
Right.
But it's our goal is to have these at SBDC and have them at the Chamber. Anybody walks in, they can pick this up and then call us when they have questions.
Can we see it before it's final? Can the Planning Commission see it before it's final?
No.
Or it's got enough paper to
look
at it right there.
I take one with me. I can't read it while you guys are all talking.
How about if I PDF you a copy?
Okay, that's good.
Okay.
I just want to see if I can wade through it.
Anyway, we're 20 minutes to 8. We can probably get out of here early, I guess. But
when's our next meeting?
We need to schedule our next meeting, and we'll plan for 2 hours apiece. And if we can, let's try to commit to ourselves and to each other that we're going to nose to the grindstone and get some stuff done in those 2 hour periods. My recommendation would be that we do these meetings in 3 week intervals. Part of that is to accommodate Nancy. Tax season is coming. So 3 weeks.
Can we not see them on Wednesday as well?
3 weeks from today. We can pick any day of the week. It doesn't matter that much. It's easier to prepare for things on Wednesdays for my staff because our office is closed to the public on Wednesday.
We're talking about Wednesday the 1st.
But Wednesday the 1st or
the 8th.
Were we going to consider
Thursday the 2nd?
Thursday the 2nd.
We're wide open. So.
Well, Wednesday and Thursday are both that day. No, not night.
Vivian, what about late afternoon? In the afternoon instead of the evening on Wednesday?
Evenings. Evenings would be better.
Evenings are better for working.
Okay. Evenings, afternoons. Evenings.
February 2nd?
Sorry, folks. Since you're already here, I know what you're
doing. Long day. Okay.
So it is the 2nd, Ben? How much is the 2nd?
That's the Thursday.
That's the Thursday. Or you want to go Wednesday? I prefer Wednesdays because the office is closed on those days.
Okay.
Okay, well, Wednesdays sometimes the four commissioners meet at once a month. They meet in the evening. And so I would be unfortunately deprived of that.
The second Wednesday, that was
delightful.
Tonight.
Yes, I
thought
that.
Because I would have been there. Right.
Yeah. So that's why I just want to meet on Wednesdays because of that.
Okay.
So maybe we can work around that.
Well, Wednesday the 1st, then we're not conflicting
with
the board. And Wednesday the 22nd of March or February, we're not conflicting with the board. 3 weeks after that is the second meeting in March 14th, so we might switch that one. But can we commit to Wednesday the 1st at 6 and Wednesday the 22nd at 6?
Wednesday the 1st.
And that'll be here.
Is that going to be a screwed-up week because it's short, because of the holiday on Monday? I don't know, is there a
week? I don't know, short weeks.
President's Day.
Yeah, President's Day.
It's the 20th.
Because actually the 22nd is the real... No, never mind.
So the 22nd?
Yeah.
Okay, we've got date, time, and place for the next couple of meetings. After hearing the discussion and kind of throwing out what your objectives are and talking about some of the issues we had on the board, what would you like me to supply you before the next meeting? Do you want to see other ordinances?
Yes. Yeah.
At least the City of Grants Pass.
Okay.
And we do want
City of Grants Pass is maybe our primary ordinance?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And
I was just going to say, you'll have a sample of your proposed one for Sherwood, or?
You want to see that as well?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Warden Vivian, you two have already, and Don's seen it already as well, the draft ordinance for home occupation. So we'll give you the draft that I've done in another jurisdiction. We'll give you Grants Pass ordinance. And I'll leave it to Valerie to come up with one or two others, perhaps.
I've collected Jackson County and Douglas County because I do think it's important that we are looking at other rural type of ordinances.
Right.
Grants Pass is close, yes, it's urban.
Right.
So we do have other considerations when it comes
to...
We
want to keep the demographics as close as possible we're compared to.
Right. Yeah, keep it Southern Oregon because we're different here.
Right.
And we really don't have to invent the wheel again. I mean, these people, this has been around, everybody,
Well, and they're within the same land use, which isn't a whole lot. But.
Well, and that's a good point, Ward. And I'd like you to look at those ordinances, look at things with a critical eye, but at the same time, if you see something you like, circle it and say, hey, this works. Let's do it. That's good language, or that's a good list, or I like the way this is structured. Some of the ones that I've pulled already, I've got King County, Washington, Arlington, Virginia, County of Santa Clara in California. And I pulled these and I printed them. What I might do is take some excerpts of them and say these are how different jurisdictions treat things. King County, Washington, as an example, they have a percentage of the total floor area of the dwelling unit that you can do a home occupation in. And if you are in that, it's an accessory activity. And unless they set a threshold that say, over this threshold, you are a regulated activity. Under that threshold, you are not. It's the exemption threshold that we talked about. But they base it on square footage of the home.
And which you have to review.
Which is interesting, because I know when you do your taxes, if you're working out of your home, it's based on a percentage, and
there's
a lot of things. So we've got some tie-in there, perhaps. But maybe, Valerie and I can spend some time going through and maybe highlight some different treatments on how people have thought about those thresholds that we talked about between the different types. But it may not be a foregone conclusion, but I know the board and the planning commission, when they first looked at it, likes this way. And it's, maybe the wording isn't very good, but the sentence kind of fits the right there, so to speak.
Right.
We've got a graduated level. Fees can follow that. And I think if we start thinking of things in those categories, what are the thresholds between those categories, that starts to make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's easier for everyone to organize
your thoughts. Valerie, can you email these to us?
Yes, I will do that.
And then we'll have plenty of time to review.
How much time do you guys want for reviewing information?
About 3 weeks.
How long did you guys want to review these things before they
stopped reviewing?
Well, as good as you can. I mean, if it's a week, that'd be great.
Well, it's going to take you some time to go through and find all the stuff. I mean, yeah, be fair to yourself, too.
Right.
We've got some materials prepared already that we can ship out to you right away. But what we'll try to do is collect them so you get them all at once. I don't like to send a document here and then another one 2 days later and that sort of thing. That's okay.
And you're going to send me a copy of that thing?
I have it written down, Vivian.
Oh, no,
I'm going to send you three copies.
Three copies? Okay.
Can I ask a question based on what we're talking about, the tier types, and we're talking about the sliding scale of maybe reduced speed? With the situation that the county is in right now, is there going to be any opposition to the fact that we're lowering rates? And are we going to be spinning our wheels in the sand?
I don't think so.
I mean, they're willing to say we want more business to come to Josephine County, so we're willing to lower the fees even though it's going to reduce. I don't think it's going to reduce the income. I think it's going to increase the income because we've got people aren't paying it.
That's people turning around because they don't want to do it.
We put our salesman hat on. There's
three things to consider with all this, and it's jobs, and jobs.
Right.
Exactly. Right. We just got to generate those. We just don't have it here.
Right.
We're kind of banking on the fact that 78 number is going to double or triple. It's got to, and even though the per permit charge is going to go down, and you know annual fees are another issue. I think we start to budget. We have to make some predictions on what this is going to generate. But my department is in our last budget cycle. We tried to be 75%. Fee supported. Our fees this year have been disappointing. We don't have the revenue coming in. And we have a lot of work to do on, you know, we're not making a dime off doing this work. This is investment by the citizens in long-range planning that's going to pay off in the long run. But the commissioners have already considered doing a $1,000 support of businesses that do want to come in under the current ordinance and file for their permits. And we have economic development funds, which are lottery funds. Mm-hmm. And they've talked about maybe for a short period of time in the interim until this ordinance is on board, allowing a $1,000, some figure of fee to be supported for economic development. So when people come in, they pay the fee, but they also get a voucher for $1,000 from the county and waive that portion of the fee. Mm-hmm. That's been considered. Finance has taken a look at it. I've reviewed it, written a draft ordinance, and we're going to discuss that with the board, I believe, in the next week or two.
Is that in relation to maybe an amnesty? Come get on board, you'll be being your annual fee, which will...
I haven't heard it couched that way.
Okay.
It's just been a supplement to fee because we have a fund to take that from. One of the issues that we deal with fees in the land use world in the state of Oregon is the fee decision is a land use decision. And therefore, it has to go to a public hearing and it has to go through all the rigmarole that we do with any other code change regarding land use. That was a decision that Land Use Board of Appeals came down with a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And a fee decision is a land use decision. So while we're writing an ordinance, and we got to go to the hearing anyway, do it at the same time.
I would like
Let me finish the thought. The $1,000 voucher, however, because it's a voucher and it's not actually reducing the fee, it's just a supplement that the county is willing to provide, that doesn't go through a land use hearing.
Okay.
So that's why I think the board was thinking about going that way. The amnesty idea, I haven't heard them discuss that, but that's something to consider.
So I hope that once we create this ordinance and draft it up, that the other part that will go hand in hand with this is to put it out to people to
because we've all been talking about that. It's not going to do any good if people don't know that it's there. You know, get it on our website, small business development, anywhere we can.
Yeah, we got to sell it.
We need to inform the people about it.
Right. Because for any fee reductions that we do, even though that may create less revenue than what we would get for an application now, by supporting businesses in our community, we're supporting the economy of our community. So, what comes around goes around. You know, that's as important as any revenue that's taken in by the county. And if they don't know that we're here to do that,
they don't have a perception that we're here to help them right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
we're part of
the
So we need to
look at
that as the other PR piece of this. They need to know
we're, looked at an
we're doing this to help you. We're encouraging.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Next quick meeting word. You get a run.
Oh, meeting adjourned.
All in favor?